Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our trek through St. Matthew with the Canaanite woman, healings and the feeding of the 4,000, demand for a sign, leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees, and the confession of St. Peter. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at The Word Endures and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Here's a marker. In 1972, the comedian George Carlin began to perform a routine called The 7 Words You Can't Say on TV. Carlin's list seems like a quaint relic, but it would be easy to put together a new list called Things You Can't Say If You're a Student or Professor at a College or University or an employee of many big corporations. And there wouldn't be just 7 items on that list. 70 times 7 would be closer to the mark. I won't go down the list, but I'll mention one that I've discussed in a published opinion. You can't say that marriage is a union between one man and one woman. Until very recently, that's what the vast majority of Americans thought. Now it's considered bigotry.
That is U.S. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito speaking recently at a Federalist Society National Lawyers Convention via Zoom. He goes on to say that he knew already with the Obergefell decision, to which he dissented, that that decision that made same-sex marriage legal nationwide would lead to questions of religious freedom, freedom of speech, well, the First Amendment. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 18th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be spending some time with Terry Mattingly talking about media coverage of religious liberty. We'll be talking with Dr. Michael New, columnist for National Review Online. After that, we'll discuss abortion legislation in Massachusetts and Colorado. Massachusetts considering something called the Roe Amendment that would make abortion legal all 9 months and severely curtail parental involvement laws there in that state. And Colorado recently, well, it practically destroyed Amendment 115 that would have modestly put gestational period limits on abortion. Why did that go down in flames? Did it have anything to do with the money? We'll spend some time with you, our listeners, going through listener email, the Issues Etc. comment line. Then Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor, joins us in the last half hour for some post-election analysis. Joining us to discuss media coverage of religious liberty, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow at the Overbee Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Terry, why did the Daily Beast team think that it was news that a Christian recently discussed conversion with people in other faiths?
Well, you know, I heard about that the last 24 or 36 hours in a stream of emails from a number of people. Then I also noticed that Mark Hemingway on Twitter really expressed it as a journalism issue. He said, like, why did the team, the publishers of the Daily Beast, think that it was a news story that an evangelical Christian who's now headed to Congress thought it was okay to evangelize Muslim, Jews, or other people that he talked to? Why was evangelism a shocking action? It even, in the lead, there's a crucial moment where it says he admitted that he had talked to other people about Christ. Okay, now this is fascinating stuff. But I think the main thing that listeners need to take away from this, I think a lot of our listeners and a lot of the people who sent me emails said that this was another example of the press's prejudice against Christianity. But I think, once again, it's very important if you're going to understand what's going on with a lot of stories in the news right now, including some very interesting signs of tensions between the Joe Biden camp and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. If you're going to understand what's going on here, you have to understand that the daily beast didn't think it was attacking Christianity. It thought it was attacking bad Christianity, or even dangerous Christianity. And at the very least, it was attacking offensive Christianity. And what's lurking in the background here is whether this sort of speech is dangerous and should be limited. I mean, especially by someone in public life, even though there isn't anything hinting that this congressman, Congressman-elect Madison Cawthorn, nobody has said that he's done this in any way that interrupts public life or makes it a part of his political life or anything. He's just said that, you know, he's talked to people about conversion to Christianity, that he's even says he's won several Muslims to Christianity during conversations. Now, of course, that's in a way that's easy to believe because Islam is another faith that's highly evangelistic and very strongly pushes for conversions. So I could see a Christian involved in a conversation with Muslims about conversion to another faith or whether Christians should convert to their faith or whatever, and see that turning into a conversation with an evangelistic twist on it. But anyway, do you get my main point here? It was news because what he did was bad Christianity and maybe even dangerous speech, especially by someone who is in politics, which of course is something real. It's real, really important.
So I'm thinking about something you mentioned in a column in conjunction with this story from the Daily Beast, and that was an encounter between Senator Bernie Sanders and Russell Vought, who was up for some rather obscure office in the White House. I can't remember what it was, but they had an exchange over religious. It sounded to me an awful lot like Senator Sanders trying to apply a religious test for public.
But see, once again, is Sanders was saying that this former faculty member at Wheaton College, who had taken a position in a public dispute a couple of years ago at Wheaton, where a Wheaton College religion professor said that made a statement that the God of Israel and Christianity is also the God of Islam, and a controversial statement for Muslims as well as for Christians or Jews, by the way. But anyway, Sanders made it very clear that this man held theological views that Sanders considered an attack on what it meant to be an American, to be a good American. Let me read actually a part of that exchange. Sanders said, you wrote, Muslims do not have a deficient do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned. Do you believe that statement is Islamophobic? And Vought said, Senator, I'm a Christian. At which point Sanders shouted him down. I understand you're a Christian, but this country is made up of people who are not. Do you think that people who are not Christian are going to be condemned? Sanders concluded that he would reject Vought's candidacy because this nominee is really not someone who this country is supposed to be about. So the problem here was not a matter of political belief. They were not arguing about the First Amendment or this. Sanders was saying that this man's theological beliefs made him unworthy of public service. I thought it was very fascinating that a Muslim human rights activist that I interviewed at that time, he wrote what I thought was a very brave commentary online in which he said he wondered if Sanders realized that if Christianity is not the only faith in the world that is not universalistic on salvation, and that in effect Sanders was saying that any devout practicing Muslim who believed you were supposed to convert to Islam, that they shouldn't serve in government either. You can imagine a headline, Sanders says Muslims are not worthy of being in U.S. government. That would have been a huge story. But it's funny how it wasn't that huge a story that he said someone holding a traditional Christian view of salvation through Christ alone is what's the phrase there, is not someone who this country is supposed to be about. I mean, he's not even a proper American, let alone a potential public servant. Now, from a journalistic perspective, once again, I think it's very important to realize that the people in the Daily Beast newsroom, and a lot of the journalists who were hearing this, I think a lot of our listeners, and I know a lot of Get Religion readers, express this as being anti-Christian. But the people in the newsroom don't think that that's what they're saying. They're saying that there are good Christians and there are bad Christians. And the difference between the two is bad Christians are willing to say things like this. They're willing to say you need to be converted to Jesus Christ to be saved. That's bad. That's dangerous. That's offensive. And you shouldn't be allowed in government if you say things like that. Because we know all kinds of people in our newsroom and in our lives who are Christians who don't believe that, who go to churches that are either universalistic or they've just grown silent on it. And those people, you see, are good Christians. And so they don't think they're being anti-Christian. They're saying, well, look, I mean, there's all these other folks that are Christians, and they're good Christians, they're devout Christians, and they don't believe that. So you really don't need to say things like that, because that's only what some Christians believe. And if you raise issues of church history or whatever, at that point, the discussion's going to get more complex, which is exactly what makes it an important story and why you need to have coverage in which you treat people on both sides of those issues with a degree of seriousness and accuracy that that shows them some respect.
You say, Terry, that reporters getting ready to tiptoe into coverage of stories that mix politics with centuries of Christian tradition should probably check the Bible to see if Jesus might have spoken on the subject at some point. What do you mean?
Don't you wish that there was an irony font that we could type in that people could understand? I came real close in the post I put up about this. I wrote, there are times when it really helps to find out if Jesus, look for quotes in the New Testament, has addressed the issue you're preparing to cover. And I'm trying to be as dry as I possibly can. What I originally wrote, there are times when it really helps to find out if that Jesus guy, look for quotes. And I thought, that's a little bit sarcastic. So I took out that Jesus guy and just put Jesus. What I'm saying here is these people seem to think that it's strange that Christians feel called to do evangelism, to convert people, to make new disciples, when anyone who has spent, what, 4 or 5 days in a vacation Bible school, or whatever those are called now, summer church camp or whatever, has probably heard of the Great Commission and probably realizes that the Great Commission is a pretty big deal in Christianity and that there's more to it than church growth statistics and maybe balancing the parish budget. But for some of our listeners in a Lutheran background, surely a lot of our listeners realize that in this world of media, there are good Lutherans and there are bad Lutherans. Is that safe to say?
Oh, as one deemed a bad Lutheran, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah. Yeah. If the black hat fits, you're willing to wear it as a part of your vestments. You've got the same thing going on right now in Catholicism, where there are, from the media perspective, good Catholics and there are bad Catholics. And that's why I think it's so important to look at this in the context of what we're going into. It's fascinating. I didn't have a chance to put this in the piece I wrote earlier because, frankly, it was long enough the way it was, and I thought I'd save it for later. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has waded in, whether they knew it or not, they've waded into one of the most interesting subjects that we've talked about many times, and that is that wonderful word that you see put in front of the word Catholic in a lot of stories, and that word is devout, right? So-and-so is a devout Catholic. And you have asked me, what does that mean? And I have said, well, that person goes to church more than occasionally, and they maybe they have a rosary in their pocket, and they say they're a self-proclaimed devout Catholic. Now, what's fascinating about this is with Joe Biden poised to become the second Catholic president of the United States, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops called him up and said, you know, congratulations, we'll be glad to work with you, and yada, yada, and we're glad the Pope called you and whatever. But then they used a very interesting word in this statement, and this came from Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles, one of the most important prelates in the Roman Catholic Church because of the importance of Latino Catholics, and not to mention Los Angeles. And he's the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops at this point. So in this statement about Biden, he said, "For only a second time, we are anticipating a transition to a president that professes the Catholic faith. This presents certain opportunities, but also certain challenges." And they go on and list, of course, as you would expect, several issues with which Biden clashes with his church. Abortion, they mentioned the Equality Act, but they didn't mention, I thought it was interesting, I'm trying to find out if anybody has yet, mentioned the fact that Biden had performed a same-sex union rite at the White House for some White House staffers during the Obama years. But when you hear the word professes the Catholic faith, what do you hear in that statement?
Well, I hear that they might be saying claims to be a Catholic.
Yeah, in other words, he speaks with his mouth that he is a Catholic. He professes the Catholic faith. He says he is, which is definitely a fascinating statement, other than simply to say we're transitioning to the second Catholic president in the history of the United States. And there's no question that Joe Biden is a Catholic. But do you hear where I'm going with this? The question here seems to be, from the viewpoint of the Catholic bishops, and also from the viewpoint of the American media, is Joe Biden a good Catholic or a bad Catholic? And are the bishops saying that he's not a good Catholic or a devout Catholic? He's someone who professes to be a Catholic. Later on, they made the simple point that someone who holds some of the positions that Biden has publicly stated and defended confuses the public and confuses Catholics about what it is that Catholics believe. And I'm not sure we've seen that kind of statement in quite some time. And it certainly clashes with the consistent drumbeat language we see in the press of Joe Biden is a devout Catholic. Joe Biden is a devout Catholic. Joe Biden carries a rosary in his pocket and he goes to Mass every Sunday. He is a devout Catholic. And the bishops say he's someone who professes the Catholic faith. And they say we agree with him on a lot of things that are very important in Catholic social teaching. But then there's this other stuff. I think it's very interesting, and we're going to see this come up again. I would remind listeners, if there's anyone listening who kind of knows their Catholic history, we've been through this before, and it ultimately comes down to an issue, which is, will Joe Biden be able to go to Catholic churches in the District of Columbia and receive Holy Communion? I'm sure that White House staff will test that out. They will never send him through the door of a Catholic church unless they have already cleared that the priest there is going to be willing to give him communion. They won't allow that sort of a confrontation. But at the same time, Catholic bishops in the past have had some heated debates about this and basically have concluded that it's up to the local bishop, not the priest, to make some sort of ruling on this. And this got really close to the bone in the era when John Kerry, another Catholic, was running for the presidency. And the Vatican, in the form of a letter from a man named Joseph Ratzinger, who went on to become Pope Benedict XVI, basically said, we think this is a serious issue. We think bishops should make it clear to people that this is something that affects their soul, it affects their faith and their salvation. We think they should remind people that they shouldn't come to the chalice when they exist in a state of serious conflict with the Catholic Church. Now, at that point, the U.S. bishop in Washington, D.C., the Archbishop of Washington, read that letter from the Vatican and then frankly turned to the press and lied about it and fudged greatly the contents of the letter and kind of glossed over the thing, and life went on. And there's another angle to this that may call that up into the media's attention right now, because that particular archbishop's name was Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, was the bishop who kind of rode, who watched the back of John Kerry, which raises the question, who will watch the Eucharistic, sacramental, doctrinal back of Joe Biden? And will we end up, you know, with coverage of that in the press? All of this is linked, again, to the statement that you played from Justice Alito at the beginning of the podcast, which is there are some folks who think that you just shouldn't be discussing any of this stuff in the first place, and that it's not just offensive to make doctrinal statements that challenge the kind of sexual revolution doctrines of, among other things, the New York Times editorial page. It's not just offensive, it's dangerous and out of bounds. And what we're going to get into here is statements of whether it's out of bounds for people to have discussions of the contents of Joe Biden's faith and his actions and what kind of state that puts him in with the Roman Catholic Church. I'll be stunned if that's not in news coverage as a major point of discussion within the first 6 months to a year of his presidency.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religious liberty. We'll talk a little bit more about those statements made by U.S. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito when he was addressing the Federalist Society of National Lawyers Convention right after the break. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618- 223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Do you want your neighbors and community to see what you're celebrating this Christmas season? Why not display an outdoor nativity in front of your home or church? It's a great way to show others what Christmas is all about, the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Check out the Outdoor Nativity Store at outdoornativitystore.com. Durable, affordable, and American-made nativities. OutdoorNativityStore.com. OutdoorNativityStore.com.
Satan would have used the horrors of war to rip me away from the faith. But here right now, Christ is coming with his medicine of immortality to heal that and to remind me all is forgiven.
He literally comes to where we are in our sin to lift us out of it. And that's what the joy of repentance is.
Off-the-record sources always have axes to grind, and they usually know what next they would like to use the axes on. You have no way to know what the sources of the report are and how much validity to give to them.
It's that single word from the cross. It is finished. My forgiveness is as certain as the fact that Christ has died for the world.
This Friday, November the 20th, we'll be playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. As you heard there, Terry Mattingly is one of the candidates. When we play, there'll be a soundbite on Memories of War and the Lord's Supper, one on Did Jesus Love Prostitutes and Tax Collectors Just as They Were, Terry's Bite on Why Journalists Need Sources on the Record, and Dr. Daniel Pavela, How Do I Know That God Forgives Me? All those soundbites Friday, November the 20th at 4:30 Central. You can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet @issuesetc, or wait and give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE. We're talking about media coverage of religious liberty with Terry Mattingly, founder and editor of Get Religion. So Terry, we heard the comments from Samuel Alito, Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, on his concerns about expressions of religious ideas that are now considered, once considered commonplace, now considered bigoted. You have connected recently with a case of a student down in Florida who ran afoul of, well, his entire school. What happened there?
I connected the two because Alito made his statement about things you can't say if you are a student or a professor at a college or university. And then in his speech, which even though it dealt with a lot of issues in the COVID-19 era, and that's what made the headlines, a lot of people seem to want to say that Alito was casting doubt on efforts to control COVID. When he wasn't, he said that the COVID environment is creating a kind of stress test on America right now on issues of free speech and religious liberty. And he, of course, dissented in a case at the court recently about Nevada being tougher on churches than on
casinos?
People who are gambling in casinos. Yeah, I was trying to get around the word craps table without saying it. The idea that in some cases people have even said that, you know, exotic nude dancing is a form of public expression that needs to be viewed in person, but preaching or the Eucharist isn't, you know. Things have gotten kind of ridiculous, but the entire Alito address was focusing on issues of free speech. And he's clearly very concerned about what's going on in law schools. And that led me to something I had stashed away a week or two ago, a case involving a student named Jack Denton at Florida State University. And let me just briefly tell listeners what happened there. It's in my column this week for the Universal Syndicate. Denton was president of the Florida State University Senate. And in a completely different setting, he was taking part in a chat involving members of the Catholic Student Union. And during this chat, someone made a plug for a video fundraising project that was raising money for BlackLivesMatter.com and the American Civil Liberties Union and some other groups related to similar causes. And Denton spoke up. Now, this was being done in a chat room, so he's typing, and this is appearing on the screen as a part of a group chat. And Denton criticized ACLU support for abortion rights and white abortion rights. And he also criticized the actual Black Lives Matter organization, the blacklivesmatter.com, as opposed to, say, the broader movement for Black Lives Matter. He criticized their What We Believe page statements on LGBTQ rights being equal to race, and also they made a pledge to, quote, disrupt nuclear family traditions. And he thought that he was defending Catholic teachings on these subjects. He pointed out that both of those, you know, maybe we shouldn't, as a Catholic student union, maybe we shouldn't support a fundraiser that's raising money for groups that are actively opposing crucial teachings of the Catholic Church. What he didn't realize is that someone else involved in the chat took screenshots of his comments and sent them to the FSU Student Union, which led to, after a lot of very nasty debate, including one six-hour meeting of people mainly testifying about how they felt triggered by him and offended by him and thought what he was saying was dangerous, etc., he was forced out as president of the FSU Student Senate. Now, it's crucial to know this is a state university, not a private university, that can establish kind of its own doctrines. So this guy that wants to go to law school called up the Alliance Defending Freedom, and they sued Florida State University. And they didn't win a clear victory at the federal judge because there was just weeks left in Denton's term because he's going to graduate here in just a couple of weeks in December. So they decided it would probably not – the judge said it would probably be detrimental to try to push him back in as president right now. But you should at least pay him the stipend. You've denied him the stipend he was going to get for doing this work. Meanwhile, the student Supreme Court, the FSU student court, put him back in as president just for a couple of weeks at the end of his term. So he kind of won a victory, but I think you can hear where I'm going with this. From Alito's perspective, this is another example of somebody in a religious, private environment making basic statements about the contents of his Catholic faith, and then all of a sudden he's going to be punished for it in public life, even though his statements in a Catholic student union chat have nothing to do or had nothing to do with his actions, statements, or decisions as president of the FSU Senate. Yet someone connected the private with the public and got him kicked out. And Denton told me that he said, this has certainly made me very interested in studying constitutional law and the First Amendment when I go to law school someday. But this is exactly what Alito is talking about. And the connection I'd like to make for our listeners is, once again, notice that the conflict here that led to this story, which was not a national story, but it was a strong regional story. It got a lot of coverage in Florida and got some national coverage. It started with a conflict between Catholics, between a conservative Catholic who publicly defended Catholic teachings on sexuality and marriage and abortion, another Catholic who was offended, and thus from the press's perspective, the good Catholic set out to punish the bad Catholic and get him impeached. So what we see here, once again, is not a conflict between people who believe in religion and people who hate religion. It's a conflict inside a religious community, with the press making it pretty clear who is the good guy and who is the bad guy. And the bad guy is the person defending Catholic doctrines. The good guy is the person extending the umbrella of the Catholic faith and image and social teachings to defend gay rights, changes in the family, looser abortion policies, etc. So that's why I saw the connection between this Jack Denton story at Florida State University and what Alito was clearly talking about in his address to the Federalist Society.
So, Terry, with about a minute and a half
Is this ignorance on the part of the press with regard to what traditional Christian doctrine actually teaches? Or do they know full well what it teaches, they just disagree with it?
Well, I think, first of all, that they don't think doctrine is all that important. And they certainly don't think that doctrine is something permanent. Let's put it this way. They probably don't have a copy of the early church fathers, you know, on the city desk in the newsroom there, where they could look up what ancient Christians believed about these things. But I think the important thing to remember is what sociologist James Davison Hunter has said, and I've quoted this many times. Hunter believes that the division in American life is not between religion and anti-religion now, that it's a difference between two fundamentally different approaches to religion. One sees religion as transcendent truth that must be defended, and the other sees religion as evolving, changing feelings that change to fit the times. And this latter approach to religion, which he calls the progressive approach, is clearly what I think a lot of people in newsrooms assume is the good religion that should be promoted and praised. And the other, which Hunter calls the orthodox approach to faith, is the bad religion that doesn't want to change and wants to say dangerous things, painful things, hurtful things. And, you know, maybe that First Amendment doesn't cover that stuff.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here.
Michael New will join us for the remainder of this first hour. We're going to be talking about abortion legislation in Massachusetts and Colorado next.
When that wonderful engagement ring comes on, that is the center of attention.
Dr. Daniel Pavola, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Flowing from the Cross.
Forgiveness is our diamond of engagement with God. Lots of facets to our relationship with God, but at the center, priceless, telling the story, is forgiveness.
Learn more about Flowing from the Cross, Six Facets of God's Forgiveness, at issuesetc.org.
What does it mean to live the Christian life? Reaching out in mercy to our neighbors, receiving our Lord's gifts in worship, and proclaiming His truth to the world. The Lutheran Church Extension Fund comes alongside churches and individuals to help them live out this beautiful Christian life every day. This year, we have a ripe opportunity to bring Christ to a hurting world. Discover the role you can play in this great work. Call 800-843-5233 or visit lcef.org.
Have you ever had to have that difficult conversation with friends and family when they come to your church and you have to say, "I'm sorry, you're not a member. You can't commune here. We practice closed communion." It's a difficult conversation, and yet it's a very important conversation. Pick up your copy of the Lutheran Witness today to learn about how to have this conversation with your friends and loved ones in a way that confesses the truth about Jesus Christ. Visit witness.lcms.org to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Are you planning your vacation in the Orlando area? Are you thinking about retiring in Central Florida? Are you looking for a faithful Lutheran church near the theme parks? Then Zion Lutheran Church and School is the place for you. We're in Winter Garden, Florida, about 20 minutes from all the attractions. At Zion Lutheran Church and School, we believe, teach, and confess God's truth for you. Find out more on our website, zionwg.org.
Solid, serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor: Ascension of Christ Lutheran, Beverly Hills, Michigan; Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana; Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois; Hope Lutheran, Sunbury, Ohio; Messiah Lutheran, Kenosha, Wisconsin; Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California; Redeemer Lutheran, Los Alamos, New Mexico; St. John Lutheran, Paulina, Iowa; St. Paul Lutheran, Irvine, California; and Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.